Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 317. This is the R&R edition here, not what you think. It's not rest and relaxation. This is actually going to be quite a fast-paced episode here at the Caffeination Podcast. This, however, is the Retro and Robots content edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. It was almost called the Wasteful Edition just for the sheer volume of stuff I had to actually kick into the backstream over at caffeination.tumblr.com because there is just so much awesome content out there right now. I kind of wanted to cull it down, trying to make sure we had a cohesive show together, but I gotta tell you, there is a ton of stuff to talk about today, and I'm not gonna waste too much of it in the intro here. You are, of course, listening to the Caffeination Podcast. We are the high-octane world of caffeine culture and technology news. I am fueled by caffeine and a love of all things shiny, so hopefully you're gonna enjoy today's episode. On today's show, you're gonna be hearing about any and all of the following topics: robots, gardens, NES or the Nintendo Entertainment System, Pac-Man, dragons, turntables, GE, math, pie, coffee, sandwiches, scanwiches, sushi, reviews, and toilet paper. It's kind of a strange show, as all of them are here at the Caffeination Podcast, but I promise you, I pledge that there's going to be a lot of fun stuff to play around with here. A little bit of information before you get on into the rest of the show. The Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. A little bit of a stumble there, but you know, all the other shows on the Tech Podcast Network, including the Caffeination, have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content, so you can head on over to techpodcasts.com. Like I said, there's so much stuff to talk about, I keep tumbling over myself, so I'm going to try and slow it back down, kick it back a notch, as the case may be. It's going to be really, really fun. Today's episode, like I said, was almost called the Wasteful Edition. I really hate throwing that much news away and putting it into the back channel. I really do. But I got to tell you, I'm really kind of excited about what we have for you here today. If you are listening to this podcast anywhere else except on your little MP3 player, if you're not really sure where you got it or where it's supposed to head home, if the case may be, please head on over to www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. That is the home and the nesting place of all other Caffeination episodes. All the episodic goodies are over there, as well as a ton of really, really fun and cool and interesting links that have been popping up recently. We've been doing a lot more writing, and I'm feeling a little bit better about the flow over at the site. So hopefully you can head on over there and check that out. it's been really good. Hopefully your week is going well. This episode could have also been titled the Super Throwdown Birthday Edition here. I'd like to send a massive birthday shout-out to my father-in-law, Steve, whose birthday was yesterday, my father, Scott, whose birthday is today, and my sister, Jennifer, whose birthday is tomorrow. Yes, this is one of those weeks. I know everybody out there has a week or an area in the year that just seems to be cluttered with birthdays. So it's a great time to have a large and tight-knit family, but it's really kind of crazy trying to schedule everything out. So happy birthday to one and all. Every year it seems I'm recording on somebody else's birthday. So it's crazy. Before we get too much further here at the Caffeination Podcast, I did want to tell you just a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. During these tough economic times, businesses of all sizes need to increase productivity at the same point in time while they're trying to cut costs. And online meetings are a great place to start. GoToMeeting, brought to you by Citrix, lets you meet with anyone located anywhere, just right from your computer. You can do more and travel less with GoToMeeting's all-you-can-meet service. You can hold as many online meetings as you want without paying any of those pesky per-minute charges. Try GoToMeeting free right now for 30 days. With this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts to start your free trial today. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all kinds of crazy and cool stuff, like bring you the great content that we have here today. So, we're going to head right on into the different content portions here, so try and keep up with us. All right, up first, we're actually going to run down three quick on, I think, awesome articles that recently got posted over at the Caffeination Podcast. In my little Adopt a Noob celebration kind of thing we're trying to work on, which is April 15th, there's going to be a blog post out about that by the end of this week, I'm hoping. But we've been trying to put little tips and tricks on trying to fix your blog's design. And we talked a little bit about colors before the last show, so today we're actually going to talk a little bit about layout. And I have a full huge huge article actually up over at the Caffeination Podcast, complete with a little graphic examples. But basically, the idea behind it is, how do you justify your text? How do you want the eye to flow over the page? And the ideal position is, if you are reading in English or if you're reading in any other left-to-right language, is actually left justified. Why? Why don't you want right justified? Why don't you want everything to be centered except maybe the entire block of content? Well, it's because it's how your eye flows. Your eye naturally flows as a native speaker or a native reader of a language that starts on the left-hand side. Your eye naturally flows back to the same point at which it ended or started the line above it. If you have a jagged edge on the left-hand side, it makes the page look cluttered and crazy. It doesn't make it look like an easy flow. While you can use it to your advantage to actually break up the flow and change where you want the eye to stop, like on things that are bolded or things that have italics or stuff like that, you know, it's all about flow when you're trying to write content and when you're trying to design the site as a whole. So if you have a bunch of graphics that run down the side of your site like NASCAR, you try and keep them all the same size. If you look at the very top of the Caffeination Podcast, I have the iTunes link, the Zoom link, the RSS link, the email link, me link, Puzzle Piece Productions, techpodcast.com, and Blueberry. It's a fun little NASCAR back bumper right there. However, I had to create my own logos for the top four and the top five, because none of them came in a very cohesive graphic identity, and none of them came at the same size. So I wanted them all to have somewhere near the same look. So I'm not saying you have to go out there and create all the stuff. I'm trying to say you might want to try and keep the like-sized things together, because it allows the eye to flow over them a little bit easier. However, if you have a button on your site that allows people to donate money to you or something like that you want people to click on, something that needs to stand out, first of all, break from your color scheme. Make it red. Make it something that does not fit. The second thing is, you definitely want to break the flow of where the eye goes. So if you have a lovely site where everything's nice and lined up in rows, and you want people to donate money, you need to break that flow. You need to change it so that it looks out of place, so that people naturally go there. So the hot corner for most sites for the English reading world is the top left-hand corner. That's where your eyes go first. The cold corner is the bottom right-hand corner. So if you're trying to do content, you want to do due diligence from the top over down to the bottom right. So you have to kind of organize your content thusly. I will, however, say that people are more likely to ignore stuff on the far left-hand side if the content stream is in the middle. That's something I didn't end up putting in the article, but I just wanted to pass it along anyway. So please feel free to comment, comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, anything else. You can throw over to caffeination@gmail.com. You can highlight under any of the articles that I wrote. Just tell me if you think I'm full of it. That's perfectly fine. All right, up next we have a little review article that I recently wrote called, it's actually a review of a book called The Manga Guide to Databases. This is probably one of the craziest technical manuals I've ever had come across my desk. I had to smile when I saw it, but the idea behind it is that manga, the comic art form most common in Japanese comics and stuff like that, actually has a subgenre called edumanga, which I was unaware of, but it's a ways of instructing people through the use of comic art. And there's, different ways that which people learn. Some people learn by doing. Some people need to play around with a computer in order to learn how to fix it. Some people learn from books quite well. Some people learn from incredibly dry technical manuals quite well. I am not one of those people, this is a completely different approach to learning than I had ever seen before. It's actually quite interesting. It's made to take from somebody with absolutely zero knowledge about what a database even is and bring them up to speed on things. It's incredibly simplistic at times, but you know what? You need that if you're trying to bring somebody from a really technophobic standpoint. It weaves different information about databases and how to navigate them, how to parse them into a rather engaging narrative. So if that seems to be something that you're interested in, you might want to head on over and check out the entire manga guide series. This is from No Starch Press. But I got to tell you, I really am kind of interested to see what other people think about this, because I found it rather interesting and fun and incredibly engaging, and I've showed it to other people and they said, yeah, that seems ridiculous, but it's ridiculous in an awesome way. So I'm more than open to hearing other people's examples and other people's comments about that. Then the last little thing that I actually posted kind of quickly, but it's gotten a lot of interest, is a hard drive rescue. This little device, I've come over time and time again, I've come across time time and time again in doing system service both at home and at work. It's probably one of the most important devices that I've ever purchased at either side. It's an IDE and SATA, a SATA drive adapter for USB. So basically you can plug any hard drive from 90% of the computers that are out there into the one end of some adapter on this thing and then plug the other end into the USB port on your computer and it mounts as a hard drive. It is really, really nice. So this one thing, which is under $20, actually had an affiliate link up at Amazon.com. If you find it cheaper elsewhere, good for you. But it's really, really worth the money. I've never found an easier and quicker gadget to do it. So I wrote a little article, almost a little bit of a joyous thing for this. And I have to thank Fabrice for actually showing me this, because he had one in where he worked. But I got to tell you, this thing's really saved my butt on a number of occasions. And the discussion below it is actually, you know, best kind of thing is a good defense. The best defense is a good offense. So it's not necessarily, you know, being able to quickly recover data from hard drives that have broken or computers that have died, but rather a good and efficient backup solution. So that's what we're going to be focusing on in some of our articles after the fact. We had great comments from Dark Uncle and Chris. Thank you so much. Chris actually mentioned a place a place called Drive Savers that you can actually get more information on having the hard drive restored. And there's a place called ZA Recovery.com that is, you know, trying to check and fix Windows hard drives. That it's called the Zero Assumption Recovery. I'm partial to the Get Back Data because it's always found. They're both little programs that you can purchase, but they're both different programs that actually work on hard drives that actually kind of borked themselves. They've actually kind of eaten themselves a little bit. So I'm going to be taking a better look at some backup solutions and then some actual recovery programs in the near future. But I'm not sure how much into recovery programs I'm going to get because they're all incredibly expensive. So it's going to be an interesting little thing. If you have a topic or something like that you'd like to see me take a look at, please feel free to actually check into it, or, you know, to let me know, and I'll do my best to look into it for you. Give you the wealth of resources available to me, which isn't really much, but hey, I try and lend my critical eye to whatever is out there. All right, diving right on into the TechCruft, or the GeekCruft section here at the Caffeination Podcast, what do you think would actually be more harmful to the environment, driving a bunch of Hummers around or using toilet paper? It's something I really hadn't thought about, and it's kind of an interesting little take and play on words over at EcoGeek.org, but they actually found that just in general, the softer the toilet paper, the worse it is for the environment. So I thought that was kind of fun. That was a little thing I'm going to put in my little repertoire to pull out at a later date. However, they also said that the using of luxury toilet paper, according to Greenpeace, is a that they're actually saying that this is much more of an environmental impact than driving a Hummer around. That on average, every person uses 23.6 rolls per capita for Americans, 3 times more than the average European and 100 times more than the average person in China. So I don't know how many squares people are using in other countries, but I never really thought of it like that. So it's something to consider, maybe possibly buying into the recycled material toilet paper. Apparently that's what they used at the Oscars, and I love the little quip at the end of it. It says, if it's good enough for Mickey Rourke's behind, it should be good enough for yours. So the Quilted Northern, those little bears are going to have to deal with a little bit of harsher toilet paper if they'd like to continue to have a habitat. So just putting that out there. Another really fun thing that I saw, which I am unable to look away from this. And this kind of plays into a little bit of the article that I wrote just above the today's episode. It says, I'm just going to give you a little quip here. It says, we discussed the finery of Pac-Man, which we haven't gotten yet, the majesty of Zork, and we haven't gotten to that, and then we're going to the horror of modern advertising, which is so cool you cannot avert your eyes. Advertising is absolutely everywhere. It really is. I mean, there's nothing you can do or say or think without having advertising on. I mean, even the World Baseball Classic, that strange little competition that's currently going on right now, 3/4 of the teams have ads on their jerseys, which may not actually be something that's completely out of the ordinary for soccer fans or people from different countries like that. But in the United States, for the most part, other than the people who make the equipment itself, the jersey itself is quite pristine. There's no other ads or logos or anything on that. It just seems wrong. But you know what? Ads are here, pretty much here to stay. There's nothing you can really do about it. GE has kind of created a viral ad like nothing I've ever seen. The idea behind it is you print out a piece of paper, and very ecological in this, you print out a piece of paper, you hold it up to the webcam, and then through the magic of their little interesting webcam driver, it actually unfolds a scene in front of you so that you can actually see a fully... a three-dimensional floating platform that has wind turbines, which actually blow when you blow on the microphone of your webcam. It has solar panels. I mean, there's two different things that you can have, either the wind turbine one or the solar panel one. It is really unbelievable, and it's kind of hard to look away from this. And at the same point in time, it's advertising the GE's plug into the smart grid solution. And it doesn't really seem to have any relation to their use of webcams. I really haven't seen how it does, but it's really, really fun. I'd like to see exactly how this all ends up tying in. They're getting a lot of really interesting press about it, but most of it's because of how cool it is to have the interactive webcam thing. So just thought I'd put that out there. Alright, moving right along here, we have an interesting little article from over at Yanko Design here. This is unbelievable. I've seen this posted a couple different places, kind of had to trace it back to the source. This is a different way of designing attire. You know how they said to build a better mousetrap and the world will beat a path to your door? Well, that's one thing, and mousetraps are relatively complex when you really think about it. Wheels are simple. They always say, you know what, you shouldn't go back and redesign the wheel. You know what, I think it's time to start taking that little concept to task, because wheels do have a couple different fundamental problems. First of all, they're all round and all superior looking. And you know what, everybody thinks sliced bread is all good, but you know what, people have found different ways to cut bread, so why not a different way to create a wheel? This is an eight-segmented wheel. Try saying that six times fast, or eight times fast if the case may be. The idea behind this is that as the car turns, that the different segments pull out of place while the entire wheel continues in motion, so that it is really kind of like a serpentine motion of the actual wheel itself. It always keeps the full body weight of the car straight down on whatever segment is currently being planted on the road. I really don't understand how exactly it would work, but I'm in awe of the concept as a whole. I mean, yes, the tires still turn, and but they actually have scale working models of this. So it's gone far beyond the actual normal design thing that I post up here at Yanko Design. Usually it's just a really cool and awesome basically a rendering of some three-dimensional model. But this, they've actually, the people that they're actually talking about here have actually managed to build a scale model of this. Who knows, this might one day be the default nature of tire. I mean, it's not going to be anytime soon, but it's really an interesting thing, and it's funny to take a look at really the most simplistic and the most basic aspects of locomotion and kind of see if we could reinvent them a little bit, see what that makes. All right, we're going to dive right on into the subcategory of robots. We had a bunch of little information in here. Robots now have the ability to autonomously tend gardens. There's a group of researchers up at MIT. Where else? I mean, I'm pretty sure if the robotic the overlords ever become sentient, it will happen at MIT. That's pretty much a certainty at this point. Either that or it's going to come out of some garage in like the Ukraine. But all right, at this point, so MIT is definitely in the lead over the Ukrainian garage owners. But here, there's a small forest of tomato plants, and each one of these tomato plants has different networked sensors giving soil acidity, water content, and stuff like that. Then there's actually a robotic gardener, through no intervention from people on the outside, will actually go around and tend to the different tomato plants. What I want to know is if the robot is actually capable of enjoying the smell of a fresh-growing tomato, because that's one of the things that I really like. But beyond that, this is definitely a way that robots can actually lure us into lush gardens. I mean, they can create their own little Garden of Eden, and then lure the people in there and trap them and do whatever nefarious and electronic things that they really feel like doing to them. I mean, hats off to the people up at MIT, but at this point you're just enabling the robots. Alright, moving right along, this is called the TMSUK, the Tsmukt T-52 Enreyu Rescue Dragon. This is an insane robot that is designed to have kind of like Jaws of Life fingers. It's designed to actually go through earthquake rubble and whatnot, plot to actually pull survivors out or to pull you out of the frying pan and into the fire. If you've seen the previews for Terminator, you'll see that the robots are actually taking prisoners. This is going to be the ancestor of the robots that actually take prisoners, because this thing is actually capable of lifting up to 6 tons per arm. There's two different configurations. There's one where a human, for some reason, is actually able to control it. So this is either between the giant robots in Terminator 4, or it's going to be right in front of the mech warriors that are probably just right around the corner. I mean, from a very serious standpoint, I understand there's a very real need to have robots like this, especially in earthquake-prone areas, that you need a robot that's capable of going in there, even in dangerous conditions, and moving large amounts of rubble. But at the same point in time, you need a little bit of human nuance to it. Otherwise, you can have a robot which could have a spontaneous failure and just drop a 6-ton piece of concrete on somebody just as easily as he could help it. And I'm not saying that a human's going to be able to say, hey, you know what, I think it's failing here, but a little bit of human control in there might actually end up being a good thing. I joke about a lot of things, but that's kind of crazy when you really think about it. All right, next little thing we have up here from over at Norbert Davis over at the Totally Cool Tech Podcast, being that this is our Totally Cool Link of the Day, this is the TCR 2009 Trashbot from over at device.com, which could be Wally's first ancestor. This robot is designed by a bunch of Malaysian students to hope to find a solution for robot trash collection. So it's supposed to go around and pick up things and dispose of them. So, this is a street cleaning robot. That nothing more, nothing less. It's an incredibly tiny and small footprint for turns, so it can rotate 360 degrees on a dime, and it's incredibly miniature. But who knows? We could see Wally roving around the streets before, sooner rather than later. So that ends a little robot section. We have a ton more in the retro section here. The ultimate retro game, one of my most fond memories of computer gaming ever, is playing Zork. You know, walking around the mazes of completely deep and twisting tunnels with nothing but your imagination to guide you. It was the true first ebook in my, it was a choose your own adventure ebook. That's the easiest way to describe it, because you had to actually type in all your commands. And while some of the commands and the responses were actually, or rather all of the commands and the responses were perfectly timed and scripted out, there was nothing that you could, you know, change from one to the other. But if you said a bad word, it said, you know, is this really a place for language like that? If you could tell it to kick self and says, you know, you're really not helping anybody there. So you could do whatever, throw whatever manner of verbal abuse you really felt like at it, and it wouldn't really help you. You had to actually work within the system of the game. But I loved playing around. I loved turning off the lamp or having the lamp go out, and only to find out that, you know, I was in the dark and I was likely to get eaten by a Gru. So imagine my surprise when I found out that The Legend of Zork is actually accepting beta testers. It's an online-only browser version of the game somehow. I'm not sure if it's the classic Adventure Zork that's actually becoming new, because there are already browser-based versions of it. They're basically little Java versions. Or if it's actually a new adventure, you know, with there's a new grooves, new other things to actually play around with. So I've played Zork, I think, 1 through 4 or 1 through 5, I'm not even sure. So I might have to apply to be a beta tester for this. I just think that's really awesome. Another little thing from over at Yanko Design, yet still retro, but all that much new. I don't know what all the hubbub is about this, but it says, are you cuckoo for Nuka Fluff? While I do think that that's pretty funny, this is a rich wristwatch cuckoo clock. And this was not designed, there's no real affiliation with Nuka. I'm not really sure what Nuka is, so I'm not going to talk about this. But what I am saying, that this is a completely digital rendition of a cuckoo clock. It's in garish colors that's supposed to be strapped around your wrist. The actual pendulums that hang below it are completely non-functional. It's a very standard analog watch, which appears to be made out of e-ink, and then during the hours it actually tweets, supposedly, not actually twitters. I mean, if the watch twittered for you, that would be really kind of crazy. But it actually tweets by having two little e-ink doors open up and a little cuckoo actually come out and cuckoo. So I thought that was pretty awesome and decided to pass it along to you. Up next, we actually have a little retro key hideaway from NES controllers, the original Famicom controller. Well, I don't know. These aren't Famicom, because they are, in fact, Nintendo. The Famicom were much more of a gray and purple. So this is definitely the iconic Nintendo controller, the black, red, gray, and light gray. So you have the start, the stop, the A, the B, and the D-pad. Somebody actually took an old one of these, hollowed it out, and say, hey, you know what, you can throw a key in there if you put some hinges on the back end. I don't think that this is a really good idea. I mean, it's I think it's all right in one sense that, yes, you know, this is an interesting use for older Nintendo controllers. If that's what they're doing, or if they're recreating it entirely, that's fine. But for $12, you can get your very own container. And I like the idea in theory, but the problem with the execution, again, is it doesn't really speak to being a key hideaway, because the hinges are incredibly visible, and there's still the holes for the where the cable went in. They still have all the stanchions on the inside for where you could have screwed the thing back together. It seems to be just missing that little extra level of fine detail. So I wanted to pass along, because I thought it was awesome that somebody's still selling the external cases for the NES controllers, but you know, it wasn't quite done well. And from something done incredibly sloppily to something done unbelievably. Over at audiowood.com, there is a man or a studio called 510 Studio in Oakland, California, that actually crafts turntables, high-end, professional-level turntables from pieces of wood. Now, wood automatically kind of makes people think of audiophiles and quality and everything like that, but these things are unbelievable looking. If you actually check into the gallery, they have pieces of burl wood. I mean, the older kind of 70s-style, you know, tree trunk with the bark still on it clocks that were out there, imagine that. Take it one step further and put, like, high-end turntable guts in it. Now, this is one of those things where you really need to smack yourself and say, why didn't I think of that? Because turntables have become much more of an art piece, because the record companies are still selling actual records now. CD sales are dropping. The record sales have actually tripled in the past 2 years. So the market for high-end turntables is still there. If you actually check out the different ones that they have in there, my two absolute favorite turntables are Big Red, that actually looks like somebody took the giant stump of like an old cherry oak tree or something like that, even though I know it has ebony feet and everything like that. It is unbelievably gorgeous. It's this deep cherry color with a really thick black platter on top of it. You really have to head on over there to check out. I just wanted to kind of pass along the information, because it is just that plain cool. All right, from something incredibly expensive, because I don't even know how expensive they are, but they look expensive enough to be, you know, more than that, to something that's really kind of cool and cute and all way down here. But this is from over at geekygadgets.com. $18, you too can have your very own ghost earrings from the Pac-Man ilk. They're plain black, so there's no inky blinky or whatever. One's looking left, one's looking right, and they dangle down about an inch and a half off your earlobe. I think they're pretty cool. I don't know if you do, just wanted to pass it along. Moving right along, yet staying again within the retro Pac-Man thing, but there's actually a Pac-Man ghost shirt up at SpriteStitch.com that shows a bunch of blue. It's a blue shirt with a glass of milk on it, and then all of the blue ghosts with the unhappy, oh no, I'm about to get eated, face on them. One of them actually has a bite out of it. Kind of a little play on what Pac-Man actually does to them. And then there's a little glass of milk there, so it's like they're ghost cookies. So I thought it was fun, and I thought I'd pass it along. That, my friends, wraps up the GeekCruft section, except for one crazy link that I threw into the back channel, but I still had to talk about it anyway. This is a video, so I'm not going to be playing it here on the podcast, because this is an audio podcast, and I don't really think that you need to hear it. However, it is so crazy that there's nothing else that I can do. I mean, I had to link it. It's called Zombie Jamboree. It's a Brazilian band that actually got together, and it's the strangest song. I've heard it 3 times today, and every time I hear it, it gets better. So I don't know if I've just been up too long today, or if the song's actually kind of one of those catchy things that you kind of have to hear. It's by a band called Jack Jeans. So I'm going to try and move the mic a little bit closer to the computer that actually has it, to see if we can give you some kind of example of what it is. But it's really one of the absolute strangest songs that I've ever heard, and it's kind of like a doo-wop vibe, a little bit of a doo-wop vibe, but they're saying, in at least my broken Portuguese, I know no Portuguese, it says Jack Jeans, homage to Harry Belafonte and the films of the B-terror from around the 50s. So it's a little bit of Calypso, a little bit of a whole bunch of other stuff, so
back to back. Belly to belly, I say, ho. It was was a zombie jamboree. Took place in the New York Cemetery. It was a zombie jamboree. Took place in the New York Cemetery. Zombies from all parts of the island.
Yeah, so we're going to stop it right there just because I don't know how much more of that you can take. But it, like I said, it sounds just as strange as it looks, and it looks pretty dang strange. So I'm going to let you play around with that video on your own. So it's it is a zombie jamboree, and it is incredibly weird. So hopefully you find that interesting. All right, moving right along here, we have up here into the consumable and caffeinated bits. Before we dive on into that, I did want to tell you, are of course listening to the Caffeination Podcast. We are the high octane world of caffeine and culture and all that other fun stuff. If you're looking for this episode because you're listening to some kind of streaming service out there, please feel free to head on over to www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. We are the Caffeination Podcast, and we are also heading on into the next show, next end of the section of the show, rather. Not too much post-process on today's show, so hopefully everything will kind of work out for us. But I gotta tell you, it's been really kind of fun doing these faster shows out there. That, you know, trying to cram a little bit more in there with the same kind of time frame. But up first in the consumable and caffeinated bits section here, we actually have an interesting little group that I recently found called Coffee Maker Museum. Now, it's a Flickr pool, so there's a whole bunch of stuff over there, and some of it's good, some of it's bad. But it's a lot of different people's images of what they consider to be antique coffee machines. Some of them are really cool. Some of them are like way back at the beginning of, how do you say it? It's like the beginning of the vacuum pot era. Some of them are even older than that. They have a lot of mocha pots that are up there. So I just wanted to kind of pass it along because I thought these were some of the funniest things and some of the coolest things. And it's always interesting to see where we've come from, just to see exactly how people used to brew coffee and how they're going to view what we currently buy and what we currently consider the height of technology now. I'm pretty sure that one of the areas where you're going to really see a lot of the different stuff that's in there is actually the older espresso machines are really gorgeous, unbelievable stuff. All right, up next we have a little bit of food love photography. There's no other way to say it. This is just strange. I don't know how exactly these things are created because a lot of the information for this is down. But I just wanted to kind of put it up there because it's one of the strangest things I've seen today. And remember, I saw the zombie jamboree not that long ago, and you just heard a little bit about it. But this is called Scanwitches. The idea that I can only assume is what... what I originally thought was like an MRI of the actual sandwich. It's different sandwiches like a mooncake, steak, peppers, lettuce, herbal mayo, and on a baguette. Apparently they cut it in half, stick it on a scanner, and actually scan the cross section of the sandwich. Yesterday was a D&D, a Cuban panini. Then there was an M&O Market fresh turkey, extra turkey with skin, Swiss lettuce, tomato, onion, cranberry sauce, mayo, and a roll. I mean, it's just really, really interesting stuff. My favorite, however, is actually a tuna salad on wheat because it just looks really, really odd. So if you can imagine slicing your sandwich in half and then having a perfectly flat picture of the absolute end of it, that's what this website is. There's no other way to say it. Moving right along, how cool do you think math is? Mathematicians think it's pretty cool. And if you are one of the people who's going to be celebrating Pi Day up on 314 in a couple short days, then you too might find this interesting. There are now Pi ice cubes for the inner math geek and absolutely everyone. Apparently the silicone ice cube trays know no bounds. I have the shot glass ones myself. They're really, really fun. But I don't really think that I'm that much of a math geek that I actually need to have the silicone Pi symbols. But I know there might be some people out there. This one's from over at thinkgeek.com, but I found it over at Technobob, so I thought I'd just pass it along to you. There's actually a Pi Teeny recipe that they have in there that I thought was really, really fun. But it's actually $9. So it's not that bad when you really consider what it is, but it's the idea behind this is that you take 3.14 ounces of Smirnoff blueberry vodka, then you measure the diameter of the glass in centimeters, then take the n times of the glass radius squared ounce of vermouth divided by 10, a splash of blue curacao for color, optional, and then you pour all the ingredients into a cocktail shaker with ice cubes. Of course, you have to actually use the Pi ice cubes. You have to chant Archimedes' name, correct name, I assume, shake 3.14 404-159-265-3589 times, strain into a chilled cocktail glass, and garnish with pie iced. So there you have your very own Think Geek Pie Teeny. Of course, tongue planted firmly in cheek, you can actually enjoy it yourself. Alright, soon your car will need to wake you, soon your car will need coffee too. I can't remember if I said this story before, but I need to kind of do a little reiteration here. Needcoffee.com has an interesting little article about actually using biofuels created from old coffee grounds. Now, I think there were a couple different stories out there. There was one where they were actually using old beer, and I know that beer and coffee aren't necessarily the same thing, unless you're watching the Drew Carey Show and you're drinking Buzz Beer, which I've never actually had, but I have had a fantastic coffee and cream stout from a local brewery called the Triumph Brewery. So I'm not sure exactly if this is the same kind of thing, but there's actually 7 tons of coffee discarded each year. 340 million gallons of biodiesel will be created from it. There are, of course, probably tons of inventions and tons of different things, and people need to always get their cut. So this is probably far from the general consumer, but it's something I had to kind of pass along because I thought it was pretty cool. All right, up next is a rather strange little creation. This is an eerie presidential sushi. Now, this is no politics involved in this. I'm just actually kind of amazed at how good it looks for what it is. Now, if you're anywhere familiar with how sushi is created, basically you lay all the things out, and then you roll them really tightly into your standard circle shape, and then when you cut them, you have a cross section, much like the scanwiches from before. However, somebody is enough of an artist to actually place different pieces of food at different places around where the sushi will end up to actually create a surprising likeness of Barack Obama and sushi. So I'm just kind of passing it along because I was really, really kind of disturbed by how cartoonish yet pretty much dead on this was actually done. So it was actually pretty kind of scary. So I just decided to pass it along because I thought it was fun. And it's food, so stick it in. Same little fun and food kind of thing, again, from over at Geekology. This is bacon and cheese stuffed pizza burger. This is a massive, massive thing. This is takes two whole pizzas as each as the bun, one on the top, one on the bottom. This uses, I think they said, 5 pounds of hamburger, 2 pounds of bacon, and 2 pounds of cheese, plus an entire onion and two whole bulbs of garlic. So you can imagine the massive chunk of meat and food that this thing looks like. So I'm passing it along because it looks really cool, it looks kind of interesting, but I really don't want to actually think about what this would actually do to your insides. The other strange thing they have is the way that they actually arrange the bacon on the top of the burger. They actually call it a bacon dream catcher, which I thought was kind of fun and cool, so I'm passing it along to you. Passing the savings along to you. All right, and then the last little story we have up here. Thank you very much, James, for sending this in. A coffee taster's tongue is worth 10 million pounds. Gennaro Pellicea actually personally tastes a sample of each batch of the new coffee that's actually roasted at a London plant for this coffee company, and his tongue, being the specialized instrument that it is, has actually been insured for an ungodly sum of 10 million pounds, so that's something like $4 trillion at this point, but it's really kind of interesting to see people's individual body parts kind of insured. I know this is, Tina Turner's legs have something like that, but that's beyond the scope of what this podcast usually deals with. But hey, coffee taster's tongue, strange stuff. I wonder if he ever like burns his soup, if he could sue the deli that actually gave him the soup or something like that. Or if he has to be incredibly, does he have to actually sign waivers if he wants to eat hot wings? I need to know these things. That's the kind of stuff, that the minutia that I would like to hear. All right, that about wraps it up here for the Caffeination Podcast number 317. A huge number here. So the next time you hear from me, we will be past Pi Day, so I'm sorry to hear that. So hopefully you can enjoy all of your Pi Days, especially if you're going to do so at 3:14 in the p.m. on 3:14 March. But this has been Caffeination number 317. We are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows, including this one, are listed over at techpodcasts.com. You can head on over there and enjoy the techie goodness. We are also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. That's Blubrry. It's a fun social podcasting network site where all the other shows are in there, and they kind of link to the different ones that they enjoy, so you can have fun and play around in there. And then, but last but most certainly not least, the Caffeination Podcast is a proud Puzzle Piece production. To find out more about what that means, head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. And I would like to personally thank each and every one of you who has suffered through every single one of these episodes, and all the new people who are coming in. Welcome to the circus is the only only way I can say it. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for lending me your hard-earned time and your very personal ears to enjoy the madness that is the Caffeination Podcast. So thank you very much, and stay caffeinated, people.